Chapter 9, Step 3 of the 5 Steps to Success, Constructing and Presenting Offers. There are only two types of houses on which you can construct and present offers, pretty houses and ugly houses. If you'll remember, most pretty house offers involve getting the title to the property or an option or buying with owner financing. Most ugly house offers are simply all cash offers. In the last chapter, I covered the process of constructing offers, but I'll do a quick recap before I get into using a few magic words for talks with sellers. Ugly house offers are easy to construct. Find the ARV, after repaired value, estimate repairs the best you can, ask if there's a loan balance, and apply the Mayo formula, and then buy it at least $10,000 below Mayo. Pretty house offers are also easy to construct once you understand your objective is to either get title for little or no money, or lease option it for little or no money, or option it for no money. All require free equity or it's a no-go. Try to get in with little or no money and don't guarantee debt. And make sure you're dealing with sellers who need to sell, and you'll find all of this much easier than you think. This advice covers about 75% of the deals you'll do. The rest can be answered in our training and really can't be done here without causing you more harm than good, and it's on a case-by-case basis. Magic words that make you millions for the real estate entrepreneur. I just finished reading for the second time a book called Magic Words That Bring You Riches, authored by my good friend Ted Nicholas. Ted has sold over $200 million worth of information marketing products worldwide by direct marketing. And over the years, he's put together a collection of magic words to persuade people to do the things they ordinarily wouldn't do. In Magic Words, Ted discusses how to do such things as get the best table in a restaurant, first-class seats on airplanes. I think I better reread that one. He talks about how to slash the cost of a room at first-class hotels and attract all the money you need for any business venture. Want to approach a member of the opposite sex and immediately elicit interest? How about renting a Mercedes for the price of a Ford or buying jewelry at below wholesale prices? All in Ted's book. Ted can tell you how to attract the best employees to make your business prosper, as well as how to get capable people to work for free. He even discusses ways to gain financial interest in other people's companies without investing one red cent. Pretty cool stuff, huh? And that's just the first few chapters. This book is also a masterful direct marketing Bible covering every aspect of the business by a consummate professional. As said, I read it twice. Then it hit me. Like Ted, I've got a whole collection of magic words I've accumulated over the years, most designed to help me get into or out of a deal. All of them work, and the words you are about to read have made me millions of dollars, and if used properly, could do the same for you. The truth is, students have been trying to get me to do this for years, but it was Ted's book that made me pull the trigger. Here's a set of magic words you should use daily to buy junkers. If I pay you all cash and close quickly, what's the least you could accept? And then that's always followed by, is that the best you can do? Is that the best you can do? Those seven words will make you a lot of money if you use them on everything you buy for the rest of your life. And everything you sell, for that matter. They can cut to the chase and save you a lot of time otherwise spent beating around the bush. Of course, if you're naming the price, you'll pay before you ask what the seller wants, then I'll have to take you behind the woodshed, because ye who speaks first have big tennis shoe in thy mouth. Never be the first to name the price. Those words aren't exactly magic, but they speak the truth nonetheless. Never, never name the price you'll pay, or the down payment, or the monthly payment you'll pay, or accept when selling. Okay, let's say you're asked, is that the best you can do? And the seller says yes. A good follow-up line for that works for me is, so you're saying if I don't give you blank, you won't sell a house? Now, if the answer is still yes, you won't be buying today unless you're willing to change the terms or the focus or the price and comply to the seller's wishes. A good icebreaker to use when you want to make it clear that you're not happy with the number you've been quoted is, well, what's your second choice? I usually chuckle a bit or give a hint of humor when I ask this. It's better than simply saying, well, I won't pay the asking price. Let's say you're trying to get a seller to name the asking price and the seller just won't. You know better than to pressure him, but you can't get the seller to break, so try this. How about a dollar? This will get through and probably produce an answer, so you're back in the screening process and know you where you stand. If not, you can come back with this. Well, I simply have too many prospects to work with to waste time on those I can't buy. If you can't tell me what you're asking, I'll know quickly if I can do business with you, but I have to know what you're asking. Is that fair? By this time, the seller's usually in or out. You can't buy houses from uncooperative sellers. And by the way, did you notice some powerful magic words hidden in there? Take note of how I tend to answer a question with a question. Is that fair? Turn my response into a question and put the responsibility to answer it back on the seller. It's also softened the blow and maybe even warmer and fuzzier, if that's possible. Is that fair? It's a powerful set of magic words that should become part of your everyday vocabulary with almost everything you negotiate. Let's say you're pre-screening a seller who has a house with a mortgage balance. First, you want to know what's owed on the property, or you can't possibly determine whether it's a deal. These aren't magic words, but they are critical ones. Here they are. What do you owe? Now, what if the seller responds, "That's none of your business"? Well, your response is, "Well, look, I buy several houses per year and use many different methods. I'm probably the most serious buyer you've talked to yet. However, I need the facts to be able to present you with an intelligent offer. Will this be a problem for you?" Again, a question in an answer's clothing. Frankly, anyone who won't give you the facts is not ready to sell yet. You got your answer. Move on. You can't make unmotivated sellers motivated. Or, as one of my t-shirts says, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. So you have your answer. You know the loan balance. Now it's time to find out where you're headed with this deal. So ask, will you sell the house for what you owe on it? Those magic words can make you $500,000 a year if you ask them on the deals that are applicable. With just those 12 little words, you'll know instantly whether you'll be getting a free house by taking over the debt or an almost free house with debt plus a little cash thrown in. Of course, you may also learn that the seller wants full price and isn't flexible. Again, you found out what you needed to know with 12 words. Now you know whether to proceed with the deal or not. Now let's say you can't get the deed because of the seller is concerned about the due on sale clause, or the seller won't trust you with his credit. But you see opportunity there, and the lease option makes sense. Remember, if the seller leases to you, the bank cannot call the loan due. No title is transferred. So here's the opening line for presenting the offer. I will lease your house with the right to buy it for the loan balance when I purchase. I'll guarantee your payment and maintenance until the loan is paid off and the house is out of your life. How does that sound? Notice how all the benefits come before the question. The seller has enough information to encourage a positive response. Isn't that better than asking, "Will you lease option your house to me?" Another good question that will ease the seller's mind and make you seem genuine is this. If it doesn't work for both of us, then we don't want to do it, do we? That makes it pretty clear that you're not desperate to make the deal. Another version is, if this will cause you to lose sleep at night, I'd rather not do it. Is it going to be a problem? Here's a good one to break the stalemate and get back in negotiation, as well as collect more facts that might lead to different offers. If you and I can't do business today, what will you do with the house? This also gets the seller thinking, particularly about all the ugly answers to that question. The answer may be, I'll put it on the market or list it with a realtor until it sells. Your response, and what if it doesn't sell? At least you'll get a feel for whether the seller is worthy of your follow-up or not. And you should know that by now. All sellers' minds will change with time and circumstance. Here's one you'll love if you're a beginner and worried about the seller finding out that you don't exactly know what you're doing. First, don't sweat it. You don't have to appear to be an expert. You can try to fake it, but if you're confronting intelligent sellers, many times they'll see through you and try to ask you embarrassing questions. So if you're asked if you've ever done this before, use these words. Well, actually, no. This is my first deal after graduating from some rather intense training. I was hoping you'd help me do it right. Asking for help brings you down to the seller's skill level, and you've built trust by answering truthfully. Don't worry about the sellers expecting you to be an expert. If you seem sincere and excited, you usually get the deal. In fact, being too smart or seeming too confident will often turn off more people than turn them on. They'll think you too green, and maybe you'll cheat them. Now let's say you're talking to a seller about carrying a mortgage and the subject of interest comes up. Your goal is zero interest, so you shouldn't be the one to initiate conversation on this topic. If the seller doesn't mention interest, you shouldn't either. When presenting an installment offer, the magic words are, "I'll pay you blank dollars per month until you're paid in full." Of course, that means you've divided the loan amount by the monthly principal payment you want to pay, excluding interest. If the seller comes back with, "Well, what rate of interest is that?" your response is, "Interest? Why do you need interest?" Then if you get more argument and it becomes a sticking issue, you could respond by saying, "What's more important, getting interest or getting a house sold?" If that doesn't get the job done, say, "Well, if I give you interest, do you know you have to pay taxes on interest? Don't you pay enough taxes? Or if I give you interest, how much can you lower the price? Or will you sell me the house with nothing down? Or would you wait 6 months or a year for the first payment? Or how much will you lower the price?" Of course, these same tactics can be used if the seller is asking you to raise your offer. You'll notice it all comes down to some very powerful magic words that can be adapted to many uses. If I, would you? Here's some magic words that can be used when optioning a house. If we agree upon a price, I will option your house and use all my resources to get it sold. All I need is a key to show it and a written agreement to get started. Is that fair? If the seller balks or starts coming up with objections, you can diffuse them with this. "Mr. Seller, I'm spending my money and my time on getting this house sold. And if I don't succeed, I lose. You don't." Obviously, these aren't all the magic words you can use, and they don't cover every possible use, but I'll tell you from experience, they're worth a fortune to you if you do use them. Presenting offers. Dealing with a FSBO is a simple matter of coming to an oral agreement and then converting it to a written agreement with a purchase and sale agreement, a lease option agreement, or an option agreement, or sometimes an actual deed transferring ownership on the spot. However, today we don't do that. We have attorneys do that for us. Until you have a written agreement, you have nothing but words. An oral agreement ain't worth the paper it's written on. Get it in writing quickly. Use a purchase and sale agreement when a formal closing will take place later, such as an all-cash purchase. Usually a lease option and an option are done on the spot with a tabletop closing in the seller's kitchen with a different agreement, all in my course, of course, and all on the Gold Club site at ronsgoldclub.com. Some get a purchase and sale agreement and have the seller meet an attorney's office within a few days to have the documents signed. Some actually just get the agreement signed and everything is done electronically. In fact, in today's world, most everything is done electronically. The days of a seller and a buyer meeting in the same room are over. All the documents are emailed, and DocuSign is used to sign them, and the buyer and the seller just don't come together at the same time. A good practice is to get all the paperwork you think you'll possibly need signed ASAP. You can always have them re-sign in front of an attorney later. Get a commitment while the seller is willing and ready. Postponing that commitment might give your competition a window of opportunity or give your seller a chance to change their mind. If the process scares you, I understand. In the beginning, it's scary walking into someone's house with a file folder and leaving as the owner of their house or with a contract to buy their house. It defies all your senses and previous training. Shouldn't be that easy. Why would people leave a loan in their name and trust you with their credit and just give you a house with free equity? Well, that's a hard one to grasp while you're reading a book, but the first time you go to see a seller who needs to get out now, you'll begin to understand that all the stuff that bothers you isn't bothering the seller. Remember this, it's not your job to think for other people. It's your job to give them choices and let them decide what's best for themselves. If your prospects have been pre-screened properly and want to do business with you, the best thing you can do is give the prospect what they want, a quick exit, not a couch, and a psych exam. Quit worrying about why people do the things they do. You'll never get a clear answer. And if they didn't want to do it, they certainly wouldn't say yes. Remember, I've never bought a house from someone who didn't willingly sign on the dotted line. Earnest money deposits. You'll either be buying from FSBO houses or through realtors. If it's a FSBO, you'll use a purchase and sale agreement, probably the one on the Gold Club site, and put up a very small deposit, usually $10. In deals with motivated sellers, the deposit isn't an issue. Sellers could care less. You're only giving a deposit to show a monetary consideration. Contrary to common belief, a deposit isn't even required. Consideration doesn't have to be in the form of money. It can be love and affection. But why risk a challenge? Just give up the $10 and get the seller to sign it that it's been received, which is at the very bottom of my contract. There's a place at the end for the seller to sign confirming that he's received the deposit, and you want to make sure you get that signed, because if the contract says that the seller received the deposit and yet the seller wants to claim they didn't, then they can easily get out of the contract and void the whole thing. So make sure you get the signature at the bottom. Dealing with realtors is a wholly different ballgame. All realtors use their own contracts, which is okay, and they'll want a much larger deposit, from a minimum of $1,000 depending on the size of the deal. But don't forget, you're in control here. You decide how much you're willing to put up. If it's not reasonable, the realtor may not present your offer, or you'll look foolish if the realtor does. But I can tell you, in today's market, you'll need at least a $1,000 deposit to make offers through realtors on MLS listed properties. If you know you'll take the deal, you should if you use the Mayo formula on junkers, and you have the deposit, you'll look like a professional with a decent deposit. However, the deal's at risk if you don't buy it. That is, unless the seller can't deliver good title. If the seller can't deliver good title, you don't need to worry about it. You can get out of the contract and get your deposit back on any contract across the land. So if you're going to deal with realtors, you can expect to put up a deposit. I've put up as much as $50,000 as earnest money. In fact, on one commercial deal, I had to come up with $500,000 deposit just to bind the contract. If you're going to run with the big dogs and pee in the tall grass, you got to get off the porch. All right. Contingency clauses. These are commonly referred to as weasel clauses, ways to get out if you change your mind. Now, most real estate courses tell you to load up your contract with them to protect yourself. But from what? The most you can lose is your deposit if you back out. No one can force you to buy. They don't put you in jail. They simply keep your deposit of the whole $10 if it's a FSBO. There's no reason for a contingency clause. Contingency clauses could fill up this book if I chose to write them. But some good news for you is that weasel clauses are for people who aren't serious about buying property. The clauses are unprofessional, unnecessary, and cost you deals. However, it means I'm using a realtor if my deposit is more than a few hundred dollars, and then I will protect myself. But I only need one clause to do it. In most cases, it's common and acceptable to institutional sellers who expect it. In fact, it's built into a lot of contracts on bank-owned property. When I made the offer on my $5 million house, I used a contingency clause and got my $50,000 deposit back when the value came in lower than represented by the realtor. Here's the clause. This offer is subject to a property inspection and appraisal suitable to be paid by the buyer to be done within 30 days. Truth is, most contracts come with a due diligence clause. They give you at least 10 or 15 days to do the due diligence if they're bank-owned properties, and you can get out of the deal anytime you want for any reason during that time. So it's either a due diligence clause or a clause giving you the time to do your own due diligence, such as an appraisal or an inspection. Now, on a single-family house, you'll almost never use that clause. In commercial properties, you'll almost always have a due diligence clause. If you've looked at the house and you know you're ready to buy it and you're putting up a $1,000 deposit, in my opinion, I'd risk the deposit, because if you put up any contingency in that contract other than comes with it to buy a bank-owned property, it will not get accepted. That I can promise you. This pretty much covers everything and anything you want. I want it to, and gives you time to verify your assumptions, including a home inspection, contractor estimate, and appraisal for the after-repaired value. And if you don't buy after that, you should lose your deposit. It's only fair. That's what a deposit is for. You're binding the property, you're taking it off the market. So if you find out you don't want to buy it, just call your realtor and say, listen, I'm out, and I know I'm forfeiting my deposit, unless, of course, you are within your due diligence period. Be careful trying to protect that $1,000 deposit by putting a bunch of due diligence stuff in your contract or overloading it with contingencies will actually kill the deal. Then you won't need to worry about protecting the deposit because the offer will never get accepted to begin with. And finally, if the offers aren't getting made, you aren't getting paid. Ron LeGrand.